The views you are about to hear are the personal views of Kira Lawrence and her guests. They are not necessarily views that are shared by the organisations to which Kira is associated.
You're listening to Kira's Pink Sparkle Pod.
Kira's Pink Sparkle Pod.
So, hi everybody. Welcome to the next episode of Kira's Pink Sparkle Pod. I'm so delighted to invite Jeremy Vine onto my podcast. So welcome, Jeremy.
This is fantastic. I know we're just in audio here, but I can see you. So I can confirm that you are wearing pink. And I look at my shirt here, yes, just for the occasion, right? So it's amazing. Pink as well.
Amazing. So first off, thank you so much for saying yes. I know I've been trying to pin you down for ages to do it. So thank you for finally saying yes to doing it.
Oh, well, it's a pleasure. You know, you've got such a nice Twitter presence. You're one of those Twitter accounts which is never nasty, never rude, always lovely, always friendly, always warm. We need more of that in the world.
Yes. And also, I have had your lovely brother Tim on it as well. So he beat you to it.
Brilliant.
Brilliant. So let's get chatting. So I guess we should talk about how we first met, like how we got to know each other. So do you remember when we first met? All those years ago, or shall I remind you?
Well, I think it was something to do with Cheam, where I was brought up, was it?
It was.
And was it that church on the hill?
Yes, St. Paul's.
So you must have been very, very young, though.
I was. So I started going to St. Paul's with my mum and dad at about the age of 5. And I went through Sunday school, so I went right from Climbers with the Chalmers, if you remember the Chalmer family, and then yes. I went right through to IPF, which was like the 16 to 18 group. Yeah. But then I sadly left St. Paul's because I was about to go off to my special needs school, which was actually a residential special needs boarding school, and I had to be there during the week. I was there at weekends, so I couldn't do both. So sadly, I had to leave St. Paul's because it just wouldn't work time-wise. So yeah, I haven't been back to St. Paul's for many years.
What a shame. I mean, I always remember when they had to raise money to build a new church because the old one was falling down, and they did this fundraiser, and they managed to raise the money, and I remember they just being so excited. The other funny connection is that the vicar of St. Paul's was a guy called Andrew Thomas, and he's the father of Simon Thomas.
Yes,
he's the Blue Peter presenter.
Yes,
and sports presenter. So I see him a lot. So yeah, what a lovely thing to have in common with each other.
I know, it's lovely, because I was just about to say to you, do you remember Andrew Thomas? Because his son is the presenter now.
A very funny story about when he was, because all around the time of the Queen dying, he said that the Queen had come to visit Blue Peter and he'd given her a Blue Peter badge. It was a special gold badge. And he said, with this, you can get free entry to the Tower of London. And the Queen had really laughed. And afterwards, all the press said, what was it that made her laugh? And he had to tell that joke. So, yeah, he's been in my mind recently.
Yeah. And I actually heard lovely news about him and his partner. They're expecting their first baby. So if you speak to him, he probably doesn't remember me from all those years ago. But if you speak to him, say hello from me and congrats.
I will. How lovely. But isn't it funny that so many lives cross through that particular little patch of roundabout in Cheam. It's so sweet.
I know. You know, because when I was about 13, 14, I was in the worship band with your brother for a little bit because Tim played drums in our worship band. So
yeah, that's right.
How I got to know Tim. So it's really funny because I say to people, I know Jeremy Vine and I know Tim Vine and like I know their family. And they're like, how do you know all these people, Kira? And I'm like in really strange places like church.
But also, I think what's nice is that you got to know us both separately, because it was we then connected through Channel 5 and Twitter and so on. So, and whereas Tim, you'd actually played in a band with. So, no, it speaks very well of you, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, like you've just said, I've been to your Channel 5 show, and I've been to some of Tim's shows as well to support him and his career too. So I do come and support both. So I have to be fair. So brilliant. Yeah. And then obviously the other family connection we have is my dad came on Eggheads.
He did, and this was so funny. So I remember connecting with you again when that happened.
Yes.
And it's funny, I just recorded 62 editions of Egghead, so I've been locked in the studio for 2 weeks.
Okay.
I've now, I think, done 1,460 editions of Egghead, so that's quite a lot. And that means I've asked 50,000 questions. And I can't remember what team your dad was on. What was the name of the team?
They were the Mole Valley Misfits.
Yes, okay. I do have a memory of Mole Valley, because that was Kenneth Baker's constituency, and I always do constituencies straight away. So did your dad have a good experience on Eggheads? I'm just checking, because a lot of people get knocked out.
Yes. No, my dad said it was really lovely. And because obviously I told you that my dad was doing it beforehand. So my dad, when he was there, apparently you said hello very quickly to him. And then I think he said, oh, by the way, Kira's told you that I was coming on it or something. So I think you guys had a like real quick chat beforehand.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. I don't think I'd be able to handle it as a competitor, because the whole point of Eggheads is you have members of the public competing against these quizzing legends, and they are so good. So I think everyone comes in really nervous. So if your dad managed to defeat the nerves, that's good.
They didn't win because it came down, I think, to the very final question, and somebody got the question wrong. So I think it came down to the last question or something. So they were beaten, but they had a really good time. And it was really lovely, because a few months before that, my dad's brother sadly passed away. And it was one of his favourite TV quiz shows.
How lovely.
So when it aired, we all came round and we sat around and we all watched it together. And it was really nice. And it was a lovely way to kind of go, oh, this was our uncle's favourite show. And he'd literally shout at the TV and he'd answer the questions. So it was really lovely to kind of watch it all together with my dad and go, well done. And
Oh, that's fantastic. It's funny, because it's been going for nearly 20 years.
I know.
And it's had 2,000 editions. We find that, you know, some people they've made a date with it over so many years. And even, you know, there are people who we've been told have passed away, sadly, but the last thing they did was watch Eggheads. So I'm always very gratified by that. I was told once that it has the oldest audience in British television. So I think that's a good thing. Right? I'm assuming.
Yeah. So my uncle's two favourite quiz shows were yours, Eggheads. His other favourite was the one that Alexander...
I knew you were going to say Pointless. Yeah, Pointless, isn't that funny?
That's it, Pointless.
It's Pointless because they do... I mean, it's very interesting with quiz shows that they have such a... They've got to have a key, what they call USP, unique selling point. And, you know, everyone is trying to think of the next quiz show all the time.
Yeah.
Millionaire was the most famous one that started and was just started with a big bang, and everyone loved it. And Judith Keppel, of course, one of the Eggheads, famously won the first million on Millionaire.
I remember that.
Yes, on the question, who was married to Henry II? And she got the answer, Eleanor of Aquitaine.
Yeah.
And she won the million. But there are so many quizzes that people try out and they don't quite work. And it's very interesting how there must be another quiz format out there. And you know, if you think of it, your fortune is made, because the television is always looking for that.
Yeah, it's such a brilliant show. And whenever there's a question about U2 on it, people will text me and go, "Oh, there was a question about U2 on Eggheads or on Clueless," and they asked a question about your cousin, and it's really strange. People will say, "Oh, I was watching Clueless the other day," or Eggheads, or you know, they'll ring me and they'll go, oh, you too was a question. There was a question about you too. And obviously, because they know my family link. And I'll kind of go, that's really surreal. Like, I find it really odd that when I'm watching a quiz and then and a question about you too comes up, everybody will text me and go, oh, there was just a question about your band, your family band. And I'm like, that's really surreal to me still.
Well, did now remind me of the connection with you two, because if people are listening, they might not remember.
Okay, so my first cousin is the Edge of U2. So he's U2's lead guitarist. He wears the beanie hat.
Oh, yes, don't worry. I know who the Edge is. I know who the Edge is. So, I thought that's what it was. So he's the son
of
your mother's brother?
Dad's brother's son.
Does that mean that the same brother that we were referring to in connection with Eggheads?
Yes.
Oh, so he lost his father recently. Oh, how sad. Oh.
Not my father. So it was my dad's brother who died, and Edge is his son. Yeah. So
no, I understand. I now understand the family tree. That's sad.
Yeah.
But yes, as you say, when a U2 question comes up, you're going to be able to answer it. Are you a fan of the band? Because you don't have to be.
I am. Yes, I have to be. I honestly, I know everything about them, and I've grown up in the U2 bubble since I was tiny. So I know everything about them. So whenever I watch it and the question comes up, I'm literally 2 seconds in. I'm like, that's the answer. And I'm screaming at the telly.
Gosh, but wait a minute. You're so young. They were in their real heyday before you were even born, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, they were such a massive part of my teenage years. They were the rock pop band, I think, probably, you know. They had a sort of a bit of a spiritual thing. There were something very powerful about them.
Yeah, like you too. The Joshua Tree came out when I was 6, so that shows how young I was in the YouTube bubble when they first got famous.
Yeah,
it's really nice now watching their career from where they were to where they are now. Like, I get to go to their shows in London, and I get to go VIP, and that's really nice. And like, I've known Bono, I've learned about his charity work, so I support some of his charity sometimes when I'm not working. So that's been really nice as well. So I've kind of, I know a bit behind the scenes what he does a bit more now, which is lovely. So yeah, it's great. And you know, every time something is about you two on the telly, people will text me and go, oh, there was a question about your cousin. There was a question about you two. Do you know it? And I'm like, of course I know it. Yes.
Brilliant. Well, listen, get Bono on the podcast, Kira. That's one for you.
I'm trying, believe me, I'm trying. I'm trying to get him on. Cool. So I guess the next thing is, let's chat about your career. So I know you have your Jeremy Vinyl 5 show. I did watch it this morning. I loved the breakfast debate. I did post about what I have for breakfast. I did tweet along. And I love the debate about having showers together. I was like, that's a bit spicy, but that's kind of that's fun. And then I listened to your radio show this afternoon while I was tidying up my flat. I had that on in the background. So I've been listening to you all day.
Thank you. Well, that's 4 hours of broadcasting right there. So the radio show is 2 hours and the TV show is 2 hours. And I love them both. I mean, it's very different. You know, TV is, I think, probably a bit more of a performance. I always say TV is like squash and radio is like snooker. Radio is a lot more intimate and up close, and TV is a lot more of a show, you know, where you're announcing. Radio, I mean, I always think with radio, if you name a famous TV newsreader and you say they're coming round for dinner, you're not sure who's coming. If you say Terry Wogan is coming, then you know exactly who it is. Yeah. So there's something very, very personal and intimate about radio. It's like this podcast. It might be better. It probably is better without the two of us in our pink shirts. So just on audio only, you know, because there's no distraction.
It's lovely, actually, because all the guests that I've had so far on my podcast, they've all asked beforehand that it's only audio, that it's not video, because either they're at home, they're in a rehearsal studio, or they're in some other kind of unglamorous place. And obviously, they don't want it to be seen because it spoils the magic. So,
right.
all of them have been audio so far. No one has said video, which I'm really surprised at.
No, isn't that funny? I think it's, yeah, I think this thing of people now calling you on WhatsApp and they pop, their face pops up, and I'm just not ready for it. I'm not ready for that kind of level of exposure. So yeah. I always hit, you know, no camera.
Yeah, definitely. So yours will be only audio, I promise.
Listen, I don't mind. I'm sitting here smiling and this is great. So you can, okay. If you want to put out the film, you can.
Brilliant. So I know that you've had a really lovely career. You've done lots of things in your career. So do you have like any highlights that you'd like to share about your career with me at all?
I mean, it's so funny. I've been so lucky with the BBC and all that. I was a trainee, and then the very first job I did, well, it wasn't even really a job. I was a trainee, and I was walking to work down Carnaby Street, and I noticed, and this goes back to the 80s, you wouldn't have this now, but I noticed that one of the tourist shops was selling, I guess, kind of Nazi badges and stuff. It looked really weird, you know. And I thought, why don't I do a piece on how on earth is a tourist shop selling Nazi memorabilia, swastikas and iron crosses and so on in the heart of London's busiest tourist street. And I went and borrowed one of those big tape recorders, and this just takes us back because this was a reel to reel tape recorder. Okay. So it was to hang it. People who used to carry them the whole time, they ended up with sloping shoulders. That's how heavy they were. And I went back to this shop and started it recording, and the shop owner saw me, and I said, I want to ask about these Nazi badges, and he picked up this big plank of wood and started trying to hit me with it, and he sort of swung it left and right, and he missed me, and then he hit the tape recorder and turned it off, so which was really annoying, because then when I came back, all I had was stop hitting me and then nothing. And when I came, I sort of said to them in the Today program office, where I really wanted a job, I said, you know, I've got this recording of this thing and I wanted to do it as a story. And they were completely uninterested that the guy had attacked me until I said he'd attacked the tape recorder. And at that point, they got really upset that someone had actually tried to hit their own tape recorder. Because an attack on a reporter didn't mean anything, but an attack on a piece of BBC equipment was a massively big issue. And from that moment, I sort of felt I'd started to exist, because I then got a job as a Today programme reporter. And I have had a lot of fun. I mean, I then went to Westminster in the 90s when John Major was in power, where his whole government was sort of falling apart. Africa correspondent, Newsnight, yeah. Radio 2, God bless it.
Yeah.
The BBC is the most lovely place. It's not always, I suppose the way it operates isn't always very personal. It can just sometimes be a bit, what would the word be, capricious, unreliable. But at the same time, I am proud to work for it. If I'm thinking of a really, I must say, doing the graphics for the elections is a big thing for me. And yeah. You know, Peter Snow used to do them, my broadcast hero. And I took over from him, and I was there. If I was going to give you one moment, it was standing 20 feet from Dimbleby when he said, we're out of the European Union at 4 in the morning. That was just an incredible moment. And I just thought, this is history. I'm right up close to this moment. And that was precious.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, obviously, I've watched your career, you know, from when I've known you. I've always kind of seen you on TV, I've seen you on the radio, and I've kind of watched your career grow, and it's been really lovely to watch your career. And obviously,
I don't really ever think of it as a career. I just think of it as a series of accidents. You know, you never plan anything around this place. I'm sitting in the Radio 2 office, you know. I started in 2003, so next year will be 20 years, but I'm not going to mention that to anyone, because it'll just cause problems. I mean, you can mention it, you know, I don't mind, but I don't want to go around saying I've done 20 years, because then they'll suddenly start, well, maybe that's probably enough, Jeremy, thank you. But, you know, everything happens by accident. I mean, I ended up on Newsnight, which I thought was the best job ever, and then it turns out you're not allowed to have two Jeremys, and the other Jeremy was much more famous and better than me.
Aww.
So I had this funny thing where, let me just see if I can tell this story. Is it too rude? No, it's not. I was on a train and it was going out of London to Hitchin, and I went to use the loo for what might be described as a serious purpose.
Okay.
And the when I was in the loo, I locked the door, but then I heard it click unlocked, and watched when I was in a seated position, I watched the door slide slowly open. And at full stretch, I hit the close button on the other wall, but it closed very, very slowly. And the only upside is when I came out of the loo and I saw these two women on the other side of the carriage who'd seen the whole thing. One of them turned to the other and said, "Wasn't that Jeremy Paxman?" So I think I got away with it, you know.
Oh, that's amazing. That's a brilliant story. I probably have had similar fails to you.
Oh, gosh. You know, that I once told that story in a speech for some rail people, and they then gave me a kind of model of one of the locking systems, because they said this is happening the whole time and everyone's cross with them.
I think, you know, in everybody's life, everybody has something where they've gone, oh no, and regretted it.
The complete embarrassment. And usually it's something like you're interviewing the wrong person, or you've turned up at the wrong place, or I mean, there was some, I did a story in South Africa where I was trying to, they were blowing up some ammunition they'd found from all the sort of cross-border wars under apartheid. And they did a count, 10, 9, 8, and I was just getting myself ready to record it. And then it blew up on 6 and I wasn't recording. And I thought, you've always got to start recording when they start the count. That's the key lesson from that.
Yes. I've had similar podcast fails recently where I've gone to interview someone, haven't pressed the record button.
Oh, no.
And then realised afterwards that it had recorded and the person had already left the call. So then I'd be like emailing them going, "It hasn't recorded. Can you come back on? Can we redo it?"
My thing on Radio 2 is usually the music, I must say, where we have, you know, a record comes on and it's the wrong record. We did, I think, something after, it was a kind of the Russia attacks in Salisbury. We played Party Like a Russian by Robert Williams. That wasn't good. I know, it was terrible. And then there was a story about a shark attack in Australia. And I think the record, we checked the record really carefully, but for title and everything. But the first line was this, it was Cannonball by Damien Rice. And the first line was, "There's still a little taste of you in my mouth." No. So, after a shark attack story. I know. We did a story about a zoo in South Africa that had been transporting giraffes. And this is so sad. They were on a low loader, sort of flatbed truck. And the guy driving wasn't really thinking that there were lots of low bridges as he drove these giraffes. These poor giraffes were ducking and diving. And then in the end, they got hit by the bridges. And this is the computer sport, but it gave me bits and pieces by the Dave Clark 5, you know.
Yeah.
So we're constantly getting the wrong record on. I mean, it's just one of those things.
Yeah. Brilliant.
I'm sorry about the giraffes. It's a terrible story.
Yeah. No, that's fine. No, I think people will laugh at that when they hear it. So I think
it's just so, how could the guy not realize you can't drive down a motorway when you've got giraffes in the back and low bridges? I mean, really?
Yeah. Classic. Yeah. Cool. So the next thing I wanted to touch on was, now I know you are a massive cycling fan. So
yes,
tell me how you got into cycling and, you know, why you love it.
Well, I hadn't cycled at all really until I was in my 40s, and I'm pretty stressed and getting unhappier and bigger and not sleeping, and I just thought, I've got to get some exercise, you know. I think there comes a really surprising moment in life, and I've always been stick thin, but it's in your 40s when your metabolism slows down, you suddenly realize you whoever you are, you've got to just be careful about what you eat and so on, and get some exercise. It's the same rule for everybody. And I tried to join a gym, but I went the first year I was at the gym, I only went once to the jacuzzi. So I thought that was actually A, not even exercise, and B, I could have bought the jacuzzi for that, you know. So I left the gym and I thought, okay, I need to embed exercise in my routine. And I thought cycling will do it. And I started to cycle, and it is incredible for me, for my health, for my well-being, you know, psychologically. Because it's a period of, I suppose I cycle, let's just think, 15 miles a day. So what's that? 30, 75 miles a week. So I spend about yeah, maybe 90 minutes cycling every day, an hour and a half. You know, it's good. Right. And it gradually, yeah, I got fitter and healthier and happier. But what happened was, Chiara, that I also got sort of radicalized about safety. Because on, you know, generally speaking, we are, have very high safety standards in this country. And if I walk out of my office here at Radio 2, there was a hole in the floor that opened up once, a tiny little hole in down, you know, a tile had gone or something. And they put, you know, plastic cones around it. But you go onto the streets of London with a bike and you've got no such protection.
Yeah.
And I got a little bit militant about safety, or maybe I should say assertive. I just felt this isn't good enough. And what I really love is to see cycle lanes and cycle in them. And the places where people who cycle can be, you know, away from cars are great, but there aren't enough of them. Because if we got to that, now you're making me sound like a campaigner, you know, so you've got me on my thing. If we got to that, we'd get so many people cycling and they'd be out of their cars.
Yeah.
And I never understand it. You know, I could be on the roads and someone will come up behind me and get really cross that I'm there. And then they overtake me and then they get stuck at the lights. And I sort of always draw opposite and I say, do you hoot everybody who's in front of you? Because that must be really exhausting. And they have to admit there's only people on bicycles.
Yeah.
So I'd love to change people's minds about cycling. It is a wonderful thing. And I actually think London is much safer than people think. I know people listening to your podcast in other parts of the country will think, never cycle in London.
Mm.
But actually, it's got lots of spaces in the centre where you can't go above 6 miles an hour in a car anyway.
Yeah.
So, totally. And you can't be knocked down by a traffic jam.
Totally.
So, and also, what's more dangerous, cycling or sitting on the sofa eating hula hoops? You know, I think cycling is safer.
Even though I do,
there we are. You triggered me as a campaigner. There, that's my thing.
That's great because actually, a couple of weeks ago, I went up to the charity Mencap building. I still work for Mencap. 21 years on. I've been there 21 years. So yeah. So I was up there the other day, and of course, I hadn't been up there for a while because I work from home more now because, like, I'm allowed to, which is lovely. And so, of course, like, when I went into London, and by Waterloo, on Waterloo Bridge, there's, like, the cycling area, and I was like, I hadn't seen that. I hadn't noticed that change. And I was just like, this is really strange. And of course, when you come round from Waterloo Bridge up to Holborn, it's anyone's game. And I saw this guy, like, just with no helmet, no, like, pads. And I was like, if he came off, he'd get a death wish.
Yeah, you see, that's an interesting one for me. So you have to forgive me if I very slightly disagree, because I think the reason cyclists are told to wear helmets is because car drivers keep hitting them.
Okay.
And the quickest way to deal with that is for car drivers to drive better.
Okay.
You shouldn't really, I don't think, you know, I wear a helmet. I've got it. I've just got it on the other side. Hang on, I'm going to bring it for you, right?
Oh, yeah, show your helmet.
I'm going to show you my helmet, right? So here it is. So I do wear one. So I want you to know.
Oh, very good.
It has this little mount on it, which is for a camera, right?
Okay.
So I do, I follow your advice. I just think generally the way to make the road safer is probably not helmets, but better driving.
Okay.
There are so many bad drivers. It's unbelievable.
Okay.
But, you know, there's, the other thing I've got into when I've been cycling, you'll probably not approve of this, is listening to audiobooks. And I listen to so many, and it's got me reading again. And then I have somebody say, well, it's not really reading. But I think it is, you know, it's amazing. So I'm listening to a book about the opioid scandal, the OxyContin scandal in the States at the moment. I've just been reading Jeffrey Archer on Audible because I'm interviewing him in a couple of weeks' time. And it's just revolutionized my reading. So I have 90 minutes a day on audiobooks and I love it.
So we were talking about cycling. So that was brilliant.
Yeah. And I was getting, so you mentioned helmets and that triggered me.
Yeah.
what was the other thing? Hang on. What's the other thing we did? We talked about cycling. And,
yes.
Audiobooks.
Audiobooks. Yes.
Yeah. So I just have loved cycling along, listening to audiobooks. But then I get people saying, well, of course, you shouldn't be, you know, wearing headphones while you're cycling. And I'm not sure what the answer to that is. But I think the answer is that if you're driving a car, you've got the windows up and you've got the radio on. So what's the difference? But anyway, I don't, you know, I'm never going to win on arguments about cycling. In the end, I've got to accept that we're you know, we're less important than car drivers, and that's it.
Definitely. No, no, you know, it's just about being sensible, isn't it? It's about, if you're going to go out, at least wear something that if you fall, at least you're a little bit protected somewhere. Then at least.
Sure. No, of course. Of course. I've got one of my many things that I've got this light that attaches to my ankle, and it does create an amazing effect. Now the nights are drawing in.
Yeah.
This flashing light on my ankle, you can't tell what sort of object I am when I'm cycling along. So okay. I'll show you this as well, right, okay. To describe it. This is the back light I have, right?
Ah.
So, right, now it's called an elbow.
Okay.
And the reason it's called an elbow, I'm holding it up. You'll be able to see it's got an L shape, right?
Yeah.
So that fixes on the back of my bike, the end of it. But then the light itself is going outwards to the right.
Okay.
So what it does is when you're in the darkness, it makes it look as if the bike is to the right of where it actually is.
Clever.
It creates an optical illusion. Yeah, that's how clever people are getting at the moment.
Very good.
It means that drivers give you a little bit more space. That's what I'm hoping. But
you
I do, will... I mean, I'd love more people to cycle, but honestly, it's not compulsory.
Yeah, well, maybe we can start a cycling campaign. Maybe we can start one.
Oh dear. I'm sure I'm already in enough trouble for my cycling comments. I need to stop.
I see your tweets about cycling.
Yeah, you've seen it. I haven't done any for a while, but I'm just regrouping at the moment.
Maybe you should say, today I talked with Kira on her podcast and we talked about cycling. You could put a post out.
I should say that. I should.
Yes.
I was doing it as I cycled between ITN and the BUCs there, I was filming. And there were a lot of people, three people parked in the cycle lane. I thought, is that something I should do a little film about? Because it seemed wrong. You know?
Well, so after our podcast, if you put a post out saying you've done an interview with me for my podcast today, and we talked about cycling and our idea of our campaign, that will get people
all
going.
All right. Well, listen, when the podcast comes around, we're going to. I'll definitely upload it.
Okay. Brilliant.
All right.
So the next thing I thought it'd be really lovely to have a chat about is, so today on your radio show, a friend of mine, you interviewed a friend of mine today on your radio show.
Oh, really?
Yes.
You know everybody.
Marvellous Mr. Dan White.
Oh, of course, yes. Yes, yes. Well, he is a great campaigner. I should have guessed that you know him, actually. Yeah.
Yes. When you've been in the disability field for as long as I have, you know the circuit, you know all the campaigners. So I met Dan a few years ago because his daughter Emily has a disability, and I went to one of their events about their magazine, like their magazine that they have with cartoons in around disability. And I straight away fell in love with him, and I was like, we related so much to each other. And so when I heard him on your show today, I was like, I tweeted Dan, and I was like, I'm actually talking to Jeremy later, so I'll mention you. You know, and actually, it was really great that today you had the subject of disability benefits and cost of living, because I have been feeling for ages that actually people like me haven't been heard on the media because of all the other big world news stories going on. We've been forgotten slightly.
It's terrible. And yes, I mean, it's certainly true. We've had the busiest news period since the Berlin Wall came down. We've had the Scottish referendum, Brexit, Trump, three general elections, COVID, the Queen, and now the cost of living crisis, which is packing a hell of a lot in.
Yeah.
And I know it must feel that it's all just like a battlefield going on in the distance.
Yeah.
But I think what you're talking about is very central, because I think the first people to suffer when you have a massive crisis are people who depend on the state, people with disabilities particularly. And what we were talking about today, Kiara, was just the fact that you often have higher fuel needs in your house if you've got a disability, because you need to power things at night, oxygen, dialysis, hoist, whatever it is, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you've got any of those situations yourself.
I haven't. I just have a learning disability. So for me, my needs are very, very different from Dan and his daughter. obviously the thing that I need is for people to give me information in a way that's easy for me to understand. So it might be, I just might need some accessible information written down, or I might need someone to tell me, Kira, you're doing this today. Let's break it down. Step one, step two, step three. So everybody with a disability is very different. So for me, I'm on the mild end, but people like Emily, she has a physical disability. Yeah. She relies on her family for support for her life. Whereas if someone gives me an easy read guide about a subject that I need to know about, I then know about it. So we are all very different as people.
Yes, you're right. And, you know, it's funny when I'm listening to you speaking, I mean, you're so bright, I just want to say. And the way you've handled this call and you put the technical side together, I'd love to hear more about what you describe as your disability, because I don't see it. I think you're so accomplished.
So my learning disability, so I was actually diagnosed at the age of 10. So I wasn't diagnosed at birth. I was diagnosed a bit later on in childhood. Uh-huh. But it wasn't until I'd gone to my third mainstream school that the teachers there said, actually, there's an issue here and that we need to investigate it. And then finally, I was then told that I had to go through what's called an SEN statementing process, where basically you get assessed by all different professionals, like language people, speech therapists, occupational therapists, educational psychologists. Literally, you see every professional there is, and they watch you, they talk to you, they talk to your family. And basically, through that, I was actually officially diagnosed as having a learning disability. My schools told me I was naughty. That's what they thought it was. They thought it was me. So for me, my disability manifests, say at work at NCAP, if I'm given lots of new tasks and lots of new projects to work on, and people just go, right, Kira, today we're going to do this, I'll go, A, you haven't explained that properly to me. B, this has thrown me because A, it's a new thing and I don't know about it. So people have to do a lot with me of, okay, let's sit down, let's talk it through, let's work out the bits you can do first, the bits you could do really well, the bits where you might need a bit of support, and that's okay. Understood. So it's just break for me. It's in my brain, I'm going, I don't understand. Why has this been thrown at me? It's not going in. And learning disability, it affects the way you learn and understand new things. Right. So when I'm doing something new, I literally have to have my notes in front of me. I have to have my job coach with me. And my job coach is there to support me in my job. And she helps me every day to break down all my work into prioritizing and what I need to do every day. And that's brilliant, because then I can show NCAP that actually I want to do my job. I want to do it really well, but I just need that support to do it. And I'm now a senior level job. I'm now in our leadership team at NCAP. So I was the first person with a learning disability to get on NCAP's leadership team.
Oh, how brilliant. I'm so proud to know you. So, that's fantastic.
You know, but what my real passion is, Jeremy, and I hope you'll help me with this, and I hope you'll help me with this, is I really want to get on TV shows to talk about learning disability. I really want to get on TV and I want to show people that actually I'm just like anyone else.
Yeah.
I want to show the public what I can do and break down those barriers. And So at the moment, I'm knocking on doors with my podcast going, look, I've got my own online podcast. This is mine. I've got amazing guests who I've managed to write to and get on my podcast. Now, please, can I get on TV and talk about it? So I was going to ask, and I know you don't have the power of who comes on. I know that, and I understand that. But if I could come on your Channel 5 show at some point, even if it's just to talk about learning disability or talk about disability awareness, that would mean a lot to me. So I don't know if you can lobby the people behind the show and get me on.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, I would love to make that happen. I wonder whether it's more of a Radio 2 thing, actually, to hear a bit more about you on the radio.
Yes.
Because I can see that Radio 2 would be a lot better at doing what you just described, which is to try to understand what are we just neuro differences, basically. Yeah. I'm not even sure I'd want to call it a disability. You know, you're a very, very interesting and intelligent young woman. And I think that even just this conversation has really enlightened me, actually. Whether you want, I mean, if we do Channel 5, would I'm just thinking that if leaving aside your key subject, which you described as disability,
yeah.
Once we get to, we talk about the newspapers, we talk about the stories or whatever, do you think you'll feel a little bit of that overload or not?
I'd love to do that. And actually, I'd love to do anything. I'm willing to give anything a go. So I'd love to do that as well. Like, I'd be happy to do that. So as long as I'm kind of given key messages and they're explained to me, I can run with them.
Okay.
So
okay.
That's fine.
So again, interesting, yeah.
Again, Radio 2, an interview would be lovely. And again, that brings awareness. So
yeah,
if I can come on anything you do that you're allowed to have me on, I would love to come on. And maybe
all right, leave it. Let's try for something on Radio 2. Let me talk to the editor about it. That's fine. He'll have a good view on it.
Brilliant. Because at the moment, I'm talking to Lorraine Kelly's production team to get on Lorraine on ITV.
So oh, I'm really? Are you? Yeah.
Just waiting to hear now. So fingers crossed I will get on it soon. We're just waiting for green light. So yeah, cross fingers.
And that would be, again, talking about just trying to understand that disability isn't a simple thing where necessarily somebody is using a wheelchair or whatever as many, many types. Is that right? Yes. Is that the key thing? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And also to promote my podcast as well. So I sent Lorraine's press people the link to my podcast on Spotify and they loved it. They absolutely loved my podcast. They've loved all the guests I've had so far. So they've said, we'd love to have you on, A, to talk about learning disability, B, your career at MenCap, which is amazing, and C, your podcast. So I've got a few things that I'm going to go on and talk about.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. Well done, you. Brilliant, honestly. That sounds brilliant.
You know,
I mean, it's funny with these things, you just have to push and push, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah, because recently, I don't know if you saw it on my Twitter, but I went on GB News recently and I did
you?
An amazing interview. Yeah, it was with Anne Diamond, who's a TV legend of the 80s, and she was lovely. And Stephen Dixon, who used to be at Sky News, but now he's at GB News. And I had a lovely interview with them, and it was on a Saturday morning. And so I had to get up to London very early to do my interview, and it went really well. I had lovely feedback from it. And so now I've put the gauntlet down to all the big TV channels. And I've said, if I can go on GB News and do that, have me on now. So I've asked the BBC, I've asked ITV, I've asked Channel 4, I've gone to all the big TV people and I've said, if I can do that, have me on your shows. So at the moment, I'm on a bit of a campaign at the moment.
Well, good for you. Keep going.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
Brilliant. So last thing is there anything you would like to promote that you're doing at the moment? Do you have anything you'd like to promote? Over to you.
Oh, what a lovely question. I mean, let's just think about this. what's going on in my life? I've got my oldest daughter is just about to go to university. So that's a really big thing. It's a really, really, really big and a difficult thing for me, because since she was five, I've been going to the football with her. So she's gone 13 years to the football every Saturday, every other Saturday. And we sit together, and we support our team, Chelsea. And then, and so I'm going to have an empty seat next to me. So that's going through my mind. I'm about to do a talk at the Appledore Book Festival, which I'm a patron of.
Okay.
And the talk is called Why Everyone Should Ride a Penny Farthing.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. You know that kind of bicycle, the massive front wheel and the small back wheel?
Yeah.
I've got one of those. I came off it in February, so I've got to find my reasons for doing it again. I had a really bad, it hit a divot in a field. I went flying over the handlebars. It was like some sort of Olympic move, apparently. I don't know how I ended up, you know, still able to walk and talk. But anyway, I'm very lucky. So trying to convert the world to riding a penny farthing.
Okay.
And also just trying to do, I mean, every time we lose a great musician, I regret that I haven't seen them in concert.
Yeah.
Now, so I can't believe we lost Bowie and I've never seen him, my hero.
I know.
I did see the Stones over the summer and I've seen them three or four times, but somebody told me it might be their last concert. I'm seeing Springsteen next year.
Oh, wow.
But I've just got to, love him. I've got to see Roxy Music now they're touring again.
Yeah.
And I'm just feeling like these people are not with us forever.
Yeah.
Look at Prince. We just thought he'd always be there.
I know. I agree.
Look at George, dear George Michael and Freddie. And I'm trying to make sure that I do see the ones I love, because we don't realize how time limited we are.
Yeah.
I love music, actually.
Yeah. People keep saying to me on social media, when are you two back out touring? When are they releasing new stuff? I'm like, I know nothing. I seriously get told off by their people for telling things. So now they don't tell me anything. It's like, no, we ain't telling you nothing. So not even my cousin tells me. He knows what a big mouth I am on social media. So he doesn't even tell me anything about you two or what they do. I hear it from everybody else now.
Oh, great. Well, I think that's probably safest, isn't it? I always feel secrets are always dangerous, because you sort of feel you might actually accidentally blurt them out.
Yes.
That's how I feel about myself anyway. But so you very kindly asked me what I've got coming up, and I think it's a bit of changing family shape. You know, we're gonna go from 4 to 3. That's massive. There's a time when you bring up little, as ours, we've got 2 girls. And they need you all the time. Yeah. And then they need you a bit less. And then suddenly they don't need you at all.
I know. I have that with my dad. Like, I only see him now when we go over for dinner. So my mum and dad live in Dorking. I'm in Epsom, so I'm not very far away. Whereas my brother lives in Tooting. So he's a little bit further away. But I'm very much Surrey-based.
Yeah, well, they must be very proud of everything you've done, Kira.
Yeah, they're very proud. And even seeing my dad on Eggheads was really lovely, because normally my dad's quite a private man, and my dad, he doesn't say a lot. And so when I saw him on Eggheads, I was so proud of him. And he's never been on TV. He's not like a TV lover.
So
that was really nice. And, you know, to say that, like, kind of we've supported each other is really lovely. So I don't, he actually plays golf a lot now. He's retired. So I actually don't see him that much, because he's got a real golf life now. So, yeah.
He's probably on the course. What is it? The Epsom Golf Course?
Walton Heath.
Walton Heath. Okay. Yeah. Right.
Yeah,
gosh, that's a whole other world. I do not understand golf. I've never done it.
I don't know.
But
they're very proud of me. And, you know, I want to look back and go, even though I have a learning disability, I've done A, B, C, D, and I've done it. And I want to hand the baton on over to the younger generation of people with a learning disability who are younger than me, and show them that actually it's okay to have a learning disability. It's okay to not understand. It's okay to be different. So at the moment, it's actually my birthday tomorrow. I'm 43 tomorrow.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm 43.
Well, happy birthday for tomorrow.
Thank you.
40, I think 43 is a great age, actually. Yeah. It feels you're in your prime, Chiara. You're in your prime.
Yeah,
you really are.
It only feels like yesterday I turned 20. It feels very weird that I'm 43.
Oh, tell me about it. You know, the Queen dies at 96, and it seems like it was yesterday that it was her silver jubilee in 1977. I know. I mean, the speed, as Bowie sang the song, The Speed of Life.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. I think we all of us function by just retaining certain fragments, like just a moment here and there that we really remember and that stays with us forever.
Yeah.
And everything between those moments, we lose straight away.
Yeah.
And those moments are so precious, you know.
Definitely. And I remember your lovely mum, so please do send her my love.
I will.
I remember her very dearly. I was so sorry to hear about your dad. I know it's a while ago now, but I was really
thank you.
I remember him too.
Thank you. Well, it's funny with my dad. You don't always, know everything that other people know about your dad. And there was somebody who paid tribute at the memorial, the funeral service. And they said that he'd come into work one day. This is a work colleague with a black eye. And they'd said, what's happened, guy? And he said, well, I was trying to work out if I could cross this football pitch. He walks across on his way to work with his eyes closed. And it had snowed, so he knew he'd be able to actually see his footprints. And he said he closed his eyes and walked across the pitch, but he walked into the goal, smashed his eye, got a black eye. And then when he looked back, the footprints were just making loads and loads of circles. So he'd just gone round in circles and hit the goal mouth. And I thought it was such a lovely story about, he was a little bit of a Professor Brainstorm character, and he's just a lovely, lovely man.
Yeah, I remember him. I remember when he used to go up to the lectern at St. Paul's and he would do like a sermon or a reading. And I've always remembered your parents because your mum is Diana and your dad is Guy. So I always remembered them as Di and Guy Vine. So because Di and
That's
Guy,
it.
Like it was that, like those names are like so alike. So I always remembered your parents. So please send your mum my best.
Thank you, I will.
Yeah, so I think that's it. So thank you very much.
It's a pleasure, thank you. It's been so interesting for me to hear from you. No, for me too. And honestly, you're such an amazing person. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's keep in touch.
Great, Chiara. Thank you. Have a good day.
And you, bye. Have
a nice lots of love, bye.
You're listening to Kira's Pink Sparkle Pod.
Kira's Pink Sparkle Pod.